You're listening to another premier old-time radio program at Podango.com and also a proud member of the Blueberry community. Another Humphrey Carmardella production.
Zac Armstrong, the all-American boy.
Wave the flag for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand. Every killer team be champions, known throughout the land.
Wheaties, breakfast of champions,
bring you the thrilling adventures of Zac Armstrong, the all-American boy.
Fellows and girls, hear that sound? It's the terrific pulsating roar of a racing motor. It's the shriek of racing tires traveling at 100, 120, faster than 150 miles an hour. For nearly 24 consecutive hours, that car has been hurtling around the track, longer than any car has ever traveled at such speed before. Who's at the wheel? Our real champion, you can bet. Our record-breaking driver that has probably traveled farther in an automobile than any other man. Over 1,500,000 miles. He's recognized as the safest driver in the world. It's Ab Jenkins of Salt Lake City. Yes, it's a fact. Ab Jenkins has ridden in almost every kind of racing car, from a lightweight doodlebug to a streamlined airplane engine-powered car. And in years of speed driving, he has never had a single accident. Ab tells us this is mainly because he has good nerves and because... Now get this, fellows and girls, because he keeps in training. You can see for yourself, in just about every kind of sport, including auto racing, it's true that training helps build champions. And Ab Jenkins personally recommends that you follow the three easy training rules that I'm going to give you right now. First, get plenty of fresh air, sleep, and exercise. Second, use lots of soap and water every day to help yourself keep clean and well. Third, eat a genuine athlete's training breakfast in the morning. A heaping bowl full of Wheaties, those tasty flakes of good, nourishing whole wheat with lots of milk or cream and a glass of fruit juice. Ab Jenkins himself says, I'm in favor of Zac Armstrong's training rules for any fellow or girl who wants to improve at sports. And this champion speed driver goes on to say, if you ask me what I think of Wheaties for breakfast, I say swell. I've found that whole wheat is a mighty good food. And in Wheaties, you get this important grain in crispy flakes that taste like a million. Wheaties with plenty of milk or cream and fruit are a real breakfast of champions. Now, why don't you take a tip from Ab Jenkins? Get into the swing of championship training with a breakfast of champions tomorrow morning. And to do that, you'll want to ask for Wheaties. And now, Zac Armstrong, the all-American boy. Zac and Uncle Jim have located the submerged reef in the Sulu Sea where Professor Loring's yacht sank with a quantity of precious uranium-235 aboard. They spotted it by going aloft in their autogyro. Now they are back on board their schooner Spindrift with Billy and Betty and the Filipino Michelle approaching the hidden reef. As they sail along over the smooth, sunlit seas in a light breeze, they are also keeping an eye on the horizon for any sign of the power schooner Black Shark, which, with Dr. Chapato and Blackbeard and a band of ruffians aboard, is following to rob them of the valuable uranium. Right now, Uncle Jim is at the wheel, and Betty and Michelle are on the lookout at the bow of the schooner. Zac and Billy have put all diving equipment on deck and are getting everything ready to commence diving operations as soon as they reach the sunken yacht. Listen.
Zac, I think we're getting close to the reef. At least the ocean isn't so smooth over there.
Look, Billy, I think Betty's right. See how the long ocean swells get a little steeper right ahead of us?
I can see it all right, Jack, but if I didn't know what to look for, I'd never spot that for a submerged reef.
We're almost there, Jack. How are you coming along with that diving equipment?
Everything's in order, Uncle Jim. The two diving suits are laid out, the air pump is working, and the air lines are all ready to fasten.
Good. How about the three-way telephone set?
All three telephones are working, Uncle Jim. I've connected one in each diving suit so we can talk to each other while we're diving. And Billy can have one set clamped to his head while he's working the air pump.
Jiminy, Jack. I couldn't stand the suspense up here on deck if I couldn't talk to you and Uncle Jim while you were diving.
It's going to make me feel better to be able to talk to you, Billy. But it's going to be sort of eerie down below the ocean, searching through the ship.
You can tell me about the sharks you see playing around, Jack.
Well, that's all right. You can tell me about the black shark when she appears over the horizon.
Holy smoke, I hope the black shark doesn't show up while you and Uncle Jim are diving.
Well, it'll take her a long time to get here, even after she comes in view.
Hey, look up there at Betty. She and Michelle must see the beginnings of the reef.
I think we're getting pretty close, Uncle Jim.
Jack, go forward and see if you can see any sign of the reef yet. Let me know in time to bring the schooner about.
Aye, aye, Uncle Jim. Billy, you stay here to help Uncle Jim with the sheet.
Okay, Jack. Don't let us run up on that reef.
That'd suit the black shark fine, wouldn't it? But I'll keep my eyes peeled.
Jack, I think we're getting awful close.
We're not too close yet, Betty. This water is so clear, we can see pretty far down. What do you see, Michelle?
Me see nothing yet, Senor Jack. But water looks different.
It does look different, doesn't it? It's a little darker, and the waves aren't so long between crests.
Oh, I'm afraid we might strike the reef before we see it, Jack.
No chance of that, Betty. Look how clear the water is. We can look down for at least 15 feet.
Maybe reef come up sudden, then too late. No time for Uncle Jim bring boat about.
The spindrift will turn on a dime, Michelle. Wait a minute. Look ahead of us. She's showing fast. Uncle Jim, reef, dead ahead.
Hurry! Watch your seat, Billy. We're coming about.
Aye, aye, sir.
Oh, my, but that reef appeared suddenly.
We're all right now, Betty. We're sailing parallel to the reef now. Why, that reef sticks up underwater like a brick wall.
Is that coral reef, Senor Jack, not brick wall?
I know it's a coral reef, Michelle. I'm just surprised that it stands up so straight. Why, if a ship hit the reef and sank, she might slide back into hundreds of feet of water.
But Professor Loring's yacht didn't slide into hundreds of feet of water, Jack. You said you could see it from the autogyro.
It's resting on a ledge of the reef, Betty, about 30 feet down.
Well, then we ought to see it soon.
No, it's on the other side of the reef, Betty. Here comes Billy running forward. I wonder what's the matter.
Oh, I hope he hasn't seen the black shark.
I don't think he has. Hi, Billy. What's the trouble?
Uncle Jim says he thinks the sunken yacht is on the other side of the reef, Jack.
That's right, Billy, it is.
But he says it's a long reef, and he doesn't want to sail all the way around it. You're to watch the reef and let him know if there's an opening we can go through.
We'll all watch it, Billy. There's no place to get through here. The reef comes to within 4 feet of the surface. See how clearly it stands out under the water?
Look, Jack, it's getting a little deeper now.
Yeah, it is getting deeper, Betty. If it keeps on, we can cut right across it.
Jumping, Jiminy, it's almost deep enough now, Jack.
Yep, we can make it now, Billy. Uncle Jim, luff up to kill headway. Billy, run back and tell Uncle Jim that if he comes about, he can cut across the reef.
Okay, Jack.
It's not very deep here, Senor Jack.
It's deep enough for us, Michelle. We only draw 6 feet. It wouldn't be deep enough for the black shark.
Oh, I still don't see any sign of the black shark, Jack, do you?
She's somewhere on the horizon, Betty. Watch out for that jib. Uncle Jim's going to bring the spindrift to bottom.
I'm going right across the reef, Jack. Keep a sharp lookout.
I will, Uncle Jim. There's enough water here.
Jack, it's getting terribly shallow.
It just looks that way because the water's so clear, Betty. See? We're passing over the narrow reef now. We'll be across in half a jiffy.
Will there be any sharks here, Michelle?
Maybe sharks, Senorita Betty. Maybe no sharks.
The only shark I'm worried about is the black shark, Betty. There, we've passed over the reef.
Look, Jack. What's that dark thing under the water to our right?
Where, Betty?
There.
Oh, that's the ship. That's Professor Loring's wrecked yacht.
Oh,
Uncle Jim,
Loring,
look over there. Loring, there's the sunken ship.
I see it, Jack. I'm coming about. Stand by to let go of the anchor.
Watch it, Billy. We're coming about again. Help me get the anchor unlined. Quick.
I'll take this slicing catch. You work on that one.
Right. You want to be ready to throw the anchor overboard the instant we get over the sunken ship.
Are you ready, Jack? I want the anchor as near the wrecked ship as we can.
Just a second, Uncle Jim.
Oh, look, Jack. I can see part of the ship underneath the water right ahead of us.
We'll be right over in half a jiffy, Betty. The anchor's all clear, Uncle Jim. Say when.
When do you see that we're directly over the ship, Jack? Then let her go.
We're almost over the yacht now, Jack.
Hold it, Billy. Uncle Jim is luffing up to kill our speed. Stand by now.
I'm all set, Jack. How about it?
Okay. Over she goes. You make the anchor line fast, Betty. Billy and I have to run to the stern and throw over the stern anchor.
All right, Jack. I'll make it fast.
Come on, Billy. Let's get that stern anchor overboard.
Gosh, Jack. It's hard to believe that at last we're right over Professor Loring's yacht.
I won't believe anything until we finally get that uranium aboard, Billy.
Get the stern rope over now, Jack. I've unlined it.
Watch that coil of line, Billy. I'll throw the anchor over.
I'll make it fast, Jack. Gosh, we're anchored just where we want to be.
Take down the mainsail, you two. I'll go forward and help Betty and Michelle take down the jib and float.
Come on, Billy. Every moment is precious.
How long will it take to rig up the diving equipment, Jack?
Not very long, Billy. Everything's all laid out.
After we get these sails down, we'll be overboard before you know it.
Oh, you'd better not be. After all, I've got to pump the air down for you.
Don't bother to tie up the sails, Jack. If the Black Shark shows up, we may want to get away in a hurry.
All right, Uncle Jim. There we are, Billy. Now let's get to that diving suit.
Okay, Jack. Michelle and I'll help you and Uncle Jim get into your diving suit.
Well, Jack, are you all ready to go beneath the waves?
It won't take long, Uncle Jim. This is your diving suit here. I'll start getting into mine.
We need some help when we put on our helmets.
Boy, I wish we had three suits. I'd like to go down to the wreck, too.
Nothing doing, Billy. Jack and I have been down in diving suits before. It takes a little while to get the knack of it. Besides, you and Betty have to pump air to it.
What me do, huh?
You've got plenty to do, Michelle. You've got to keep an eye out for sharks. You've got to scare them away from
me. Me scare sharks away, all right. If no scare, me jump over. Me jump over with long knife. Me fix them.
Jack, is there really any danger of sharks?
There's always danger of sharks in these waters.
There's not much danger, Betty. Sharks only hang out where there's food for them. There's not much food on an isolated reef like this.
These diving shoes are certainly heavy. Listen to them when I take a step.
It's a good thing there is plenty of lead in those shoes, Jack. Otherwise, you couldn't walk about when you get down to the wreck.
I put the rope ladder over the side, Jack.
Yeah, but you've forgotten the line, Billy. The line with the weight at the end of it. How are we going to climb up and down without that line?
Hey, here's the line, Uncle Jim. Shall I drop it overboard?
Drop it overboard right by the rope ladder, Betty. And be sure it's made well fast to that cleat on deck. That line is mighty important.
I'll drop it overboard and make it fast, Uncle Jim.
Are you all ready for your helmet, Jack? Can I put it on you?
Just a minute, Billy. Make sure those airline connections are tight.
Oh, they're good and tight, Jack. I just checked them.
Let's check the telephone line, too, Jack. Hand me that helmet, Betty. Good. I'll talk into the phone, Jack.
How is this? Does it come over clearly?
It comes over like a loudspeaker, Uncle Jim. I'll talk into mine.
Can you hear that?
I should say I could. Now, one thing more, Billy, before we put on a helmet. Let's make sure we understand signals in case the telephone gets out of order.
I haven't forgotten them, Uncle Jim. Two tugs on the air lines means that you want us to pump the air faster. Three tugs means that your lines are fouled somewhere below, and in that case, you want Michelle to dive down and help you.
That's right, Billy. But we'll hope that the telephone lines don't get out of order. Now, let's check our equipment. Where's that axe we're taking with us?
Here it is, Uncle Jim.
Good. You got your knife with you, Jack? Your underwater flashlight? You'll need it below.
I've got it, Uncle Jim.
Well, where's that line with a grappling hook on it? If we find that uranium-235, it's going to be too heavy for Jack and me to bring back.
Here it is, Uncle Jim.
I don't want it now, Billy. I'll telephone you when I want you to drop it down to us. Don't forget to pay out plenty of slack in both airlines and lifelines. We may have to go through the ship when we get down there, and we'll need lots of slack to prevent fouling our airline.
We'll give you all the slack you need, Uncle Jim.
And don't forget to keep an eye out for the Black Shark, Billy. She may be showing up above the horizon at any moment.
Oh, you bet I won't, Jack. If we see her, we'll let you know right away.
Well, that covers everything, I guess. Billy, when Jack and I put on our helmets, you've got to check them to see that they're clamped tight against the corselet of the diving suit. All right, Jack. Let's put on a headgear.
Here goes, Billy. As soon as I get this helmet on, we'll have to talk to each other through the telephone.
Now, I'll check the helmet for you, Jack.
Michelle, start that pump going.
Can you hear me all right, Billy?
I'll say I can, but you sound like a foghorn with a sore throat. There. Your helmet's all right now.
That's my helmet, Billy.
It seems to be all right, Uncle Jim. Nope. I can get it a little bit tighter. There you are.
Well, Jack, we're all set to go down to the ship. I'll go over the side first. When you come overboard, always keep to the right of me. That way we won't get our lines fouled.
Okay, Uncle Jim. I'll wait until you get to the wreck before I go overboard.
That's right. Keep Michelle working at that air pump, Billy. Here I go overside. And when we come up, let's hope we've found what we came after.
Uncle Jim has gone over the side, and Jack is just about to follow him down to the sunken yacht on that submerged reef. I don't have to tell you fellows and girls that there's an especially exciting time ahead, what with looking for the lost uranium and perhaps a few sharks playing about, and above all, the chance that Shapato and his crew are speeding through the reef just as fast as a black shark can take them. You certainly won't want to miss all that, so listen in, all of you, at the same time tomorrow to another thrilling episode of The Adventure of the Sunken Reef with Jack Armstrong, the All-American Boy. Now, don't let anything keep you from following a regular athlete's training program all winter long. Have a heaping bowl full of Wheaties for breakfast, Wheaties with milk, and a glass of fruit juice. That breakfast of champions is tops in good eating.
You'll like it. I know you will.
Have you tried Wheaties? They're whole wheat with all of the bran.
This is Franklin McCormick saying goodbye until tomorrow for General Mills, makers of Wheaties, Breakfast of Champions, who have just presented another episode of Jack Armstrong's The All-American Boy.
So just buy Wheaties, the best breakfast food in the land. Wave the flag for Hudson High, boys. Show them how we stand.
That was Jack Armstrong from December 31, 1940. Here's part of the interview with Pat Boone.
How did you get over to the Ted Mack Amateur Hour?
I won one of many talent contests in Nashville. You know, Nashville, Tennessee is very musical.
Right.
Grand Ole Opry, and we had a lot of local pop television music shows, and you know, it was just a really musical place. So we had talent contests from time to time, and I entered them all, and I'd begun to do a lot of singing around town for ladies' club luncheons and businessmen's luncheons and functions, and you know, I was really in demand. I was singing two or three places a week, just pop songs, with a lady named Ruth Mowry, a piano teacher. She played the piano for me. And so I was getting lots of good experience, mainly because people learned I would do it free. I never asked any money. So, you know, if there was a guy who would sing the current pop songs and do a passable job, bring his own accompaniment, so I had plenty of offers. And I entered this talent contest at East Nashville High School one night, and to my astonishment, I won it and was voted, you know, by the judges, the winner there, and the prize was a 3 or 4 day trip to New York City and an audition with the Ted Mack Amateur Hour. And so there was no guarantee that I'd be on it, and I went to New York with my knees shaking, and I auditioned and got on the show and came home and thought, well, that's that. I've you know, at least they didn't send a dud up to New York. I actually got on, and you know, people all over the country, certainly all over Tennessee, saw that. And I was thinking, okay, that's the end of that. That's a great experience. I was sort of forgetting that it was a contest. And if you got lots of cards and letter votes in the next few days, and you got the most votes, they would call you back to New York and you would appear and compete again. But I was already leading singing and gospel meetings at that time, and it was the summertime. And I'd already committed to lead singing in a little place called Woodbury, Tennessee. And I went out to spend the rest of that, you know, following week. Came back from New York on Sunday, and Monday I was leading singing out way, way out in the country, so far out that they had no phone. And there was no way anybody in New York could reach me, because it just wasn't in my mind that I would get enough votes that they'd want to fly me back to New York the next weekend. And so on Thursday of that week, then there was a wonderful preacher preaching on Sunday nights, and I mean on the weeknight, and I was leading the singing. And then during the day, at lunch and dinner, the wonderful farm wives would have us over for lunch or dinner and just stuff our guts, you know, with all the best stuff. And I was loving that, and leading singing, and Thursday at noon, having another food orgy at this out on this farm. A car came racing up into the yard, scattering dust and chickens and everything out of the way. And a guy came up on the wood porch, knocked on the screen door, said, "Is there a boy named Boone in there?" And folks said, "Yeah, he's here. He's the song leader." Well, they're trying to reach him from New York City, and they want him to come over to the next town where there's a switchboard. And so I got in the car, and they took me over to the next little town, and there was a switchboard in this lady's front room that everybody within, I don't know, 100 miles, if they had to do any phone calls, that's where they made their calls from. And so, sure enough, there was a guy named Oscar Schoonmaker, who was, I don't know, he was a coordinating producer or something on the Ted Mack Amateur Hour, said, boy, you're hard to find. He said, you've won, you're our winner. We got to get you back to New York tomorrow. And I was just astounded. I mean, it was obvious. It just wasn't in my thinking at all that I would be a winner. So I had to be driven back to Nashville. I called ahead. My folks helped me pack a suitcase and got on a plane on Friday, flew back to New York, appeared there Saturday night, came back Sunday. But that time, that following week, I hung around so in case they called me from New York City, I'd be reachable. And they did.
Mm.
So I was a three-time winner, and that meant that I qualified to be on the finals about a year later with all the other three-time winners. And I did go back, and I won. Well, I was winning that, they tell me, but since I never dreamed I'd be in New York again, I appeared on the Ted Mack Amateur Hour on Saturday night, and of course the winner would not be announced until the following Saturday. So before I went home, I went over and auditioned for the Arthur Godfrey Talent Scout Show, which was on Monday night. And to my astonishment, they liked me. They put me on. I sang Monday night with two other contestants and won that one. And that was good, except it was a professional show.
Uh-oh.
And if you win a professional show on Monday, you can't be declared the winner of an amateur show.
For goodness sake.
The following Saturday.
Pat, do you remember any of the acts that were on with you on any of those shows?
No, I don't, because probably fortunately for them, they've never been heard from since.
Well, do you remember the type of acts that they had?
Well, there was a harmonica player on the Arthur Godfrey show. There was a harmonica player and a trained sort of Broadway-type singer, girl singer, and I was singing a pop song called I'm Walking Behind You, and Eddie Fisher.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I don't know, the audience, and they had an applause meter, and they declared me the winner. So I was on Arthur Godfrey's show in the morning, his morning show, for the next four mornings. But at the end of that, they thanked me and sent me back home. And in the meanwhile, between the time that I won the Ted Mack Amateur Hour the three times, and the time I came back the next year for the finals, I had married Shirley Foley, my high school sweetheart. We'd moved to Denton, Texas. I'd started doing some local television there to work my way through school. So I stopped off in Nashville after the Arthur Godfrey show was over, and I'd been disqualified from the Ted Mack Amateur Hour and blown a college scholarship.
Next show is Cavalcade of America.
Presenting Lana Turner in Donut Girl on the Cavalcade of America, sponsored by E.I. DuPont, Dinamores & Company of Wilmington, Delaware, maker of better things for better living through chemistry.
This is your Cavalcade commentator, Walter Houston. Next Friday marks the beginning of America's fourth year at war. At this time, the future looks bright, but the war is not over yet. We still have long months of bitter fighting ahead. And the men in uniform, at the rare moments when they can, need to relax. This evening, our cavalcade play deals with a branch of the American Red Cross, which helps these men to find relaxation. Donut Girl, written by Edith Sommer, is based upon factual material supplied by Annette Robbins, a Red Cross worker, recently returned from the South Pacific. Donut Girl is the personal record of Patricia Holland, a Chicago girl who found herself at a jungle air base somewhere in New Guinea. Pat Holland will be portrayed by the star of the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer picture, Marriage is a Private Affair, a star who is one of Hollywood's brightest and loveliest, Lana Turner. It was almost 2 years ago when Pat Holland arrived in New Guinea, burdened with luggage and rosy illusions. Well, she's back home now, and yesterday she received a letter from a friend. A letter asking a question, but the letter was addressed to Pat. And this is her story.
The letter, full of exclamation points and dashes, was from Florence. You see, Florence has just joined the Red Cross, and she wants to know how it is in New Guinea. She wants to know what working there is like. Well, it's a little hard to answer, but I can tell you what it was like for me. Of course, things are much different now. But when I came there 2 years ago, there were only 8 of us Red Cross gals, and now there are hundreds. Things were pretty rugged then, just getting organized. I didn't realize it, of course, and I stepped off the plane feeling like Lady Bountiful, with my feet in the mud and my head in the stars. I remember how I felt as the plane, with me as its only passenger, turned in for a landing. And as the plane stopped on the airstrip...
Okay, come on out, lady, this way.
I'm Patricia Holland of the Red Cross.
Welcome to New Guinea, miss. Give me your luggage.
Well, that's it in a plane. Tell me...
Holy smoke! Hey, Joe, hold up a minute. I gotta get this junk out of here first.
Excuse me, but I don't seem to see... Is anybody from the Red Cross around?
Sorry.
Oh, but I'm Pat Holland, and...
Let's get her into the shed. Okay, Joe, wheel her around now.
Well, hasn't anybody asked about me?
Nope.
Oh, what do I do now?
Come on, Joe, swing her to the left. Swing her to the left.
Hey, wait a minute. Don't go away. Hey, soldier.
Beg your pardon?
Hmm? Oh, Lieutenant.
Yes, ma'am?
Oh, Lieutenant, I'm Pat Holland with the Red Cross, and I've just flown from America, and, well, what's the matter?
Are all those suitcases yours?
But they're only 5.
5, huh? Okay, come on, I'll drive you over to your headquarters.
Oh, with the Jeep. Oh, what fun. No, wait a minute, don't help me. I can get in myself.
Okay, but aren't you forgetting something?
I am? What?
You're the Red Cross, aren't you?
Yes, of course.
And you came out here to work?
That's right.
Then how about toting your own luggage?
Come on, it won't hurt you. They're only 5.
We're very glad to have you with us, Miss Holland. While you remain in this area, there are naturally several regulations you must follow. You must keep your head covered while under the sun, and you must keep your legs covered at all times.
I beg your pardon?
Mosquitoes.
Oh.
Of course, we expect you to do your full share of the work. Work's not easy, but then you knew that when you joined up. There are many things to be done. The club mobiles to meet the flyers.
Well, after sitting for 3 hours at headquarters, the Red Cross director finally interviewed me. By then, I was beginning to feel that I was about as welcome as the Black Plague. And then I met Anne Tepley. Anne was my supervisor and the first girl I met in New Guinea. I said... Hello, I'm Pat.
Hello, Pat. How much do you weigh?
Have
a scrub floors?
Well, no, but...
You will. Sandwiches?
Hmm?
Can you make sandwiches?
Oh, sure. You see, when I...
Fine, we need about 500 by 0, 1300.
Oh, now, wait a minute.
What's the matter? You afraid of work?
No, I'm not afraid of work. Say, what's the matter with you people anyway? I come here all the way from America, and... I don't know why, but I feel like I was a Jap or something. I land in the plane and nobody meets me. I get to headquarters and sit in the broiling heat for 3 hours and nobody talks to me. I'm tired and I'm hot and nobody cares. What are you running here anyway, a private war?
Peanut butter.
What?
Make those sandwiches with peanut butter.
Oh, all right, I will make them with peanut butter. All the sandwiches you want. And I'll scrub the floors and wash the windows and make the beds and clean the kitchen and... And I'll do all these things, but there's one thing I won't do.
What's that?
Well, everybody's got to clean his own bathtub ring.
Ha ha, what bathtub?
I ran out the door, only there wasn't any door because the headquarters building was just a thatched hut. I pushed along the jungle path toward the barracks. My heart was so heavy and my eyes were full of tears and... And I was mad, and I was lonely, and then it happened.
Man, ain't that new girl pretty?
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, thanks. Thank you. settled down to a routine then. A routine of work and sweat. It wasn't bad, though. It really wasn't. The cold reception I received on my arrival wasn't directed at me personally. They didn't resent me. You see, for Red Cross gals, the ticket of admission to the theater of war is work. And at first it looked like I was trying to get in on a free pass. There were so few of us there. Only eight, and so much to be done. So much. Well, anyway, for the first few weeks, I spent my time being the maid of all work. That is, until the day I was in the Red Cross Club stacking donuts for the clubmobile with the rest of the girls when the telephone rang.
That's Pat, will you?
Okay, sure. Hello, Pat Holland here.
This is Lieutenant Crilly. Flight of B-25 bombers returning from strike. All planes accounted for. ETA 1500.
Okay, Lieutenant, that's Ralph. Somebody will be there.
Right.
Hey, Ann, the heavies are returning from the mission. They'll be in at 3 o'clock.
Okay, you ready, Pat?
Oh, sure. The donuts are stacked and the juice is in the wagon.
No, I mean you. Are you set?
Me? What for?
Oh, didn't I tell you? You're going with me today.
You mean in the clubmobile? Out to meet the flyers?
That's right.
Oh, but...
What's the matter? Don't you want to go?
Want to? Oh, my gosh, sure. Yes, of course, but...
But what?
I left my lipstick in the barracks.
You know, I've been meaning to tell you, Pat. All the rest of us.
Well, we think you've done a good job, and...
Thanks, Ann.
It's been pretty tough, I know.
But you see, the seven of us came out for the Red Cross, and we were the first to come to New Guinea.
And then when you came, I was an intruder, huh?
Not exactly, but we had to be sure you were willing to work as hard as the rest of us.
Listen, Ann. Our planes. Come on, let's go.
No, wait a minute.
No, those aren't the bombers.
Huh?
Those aren't bombers. Fighters, 175th, probably.
But how do you know?
Oh, after a while, you'll get so you can tell every plane in the Air Force just by the sound of its motor.
Where are the donuts?
Oh, right here. I'd pile them all up.
Better get them out to the clubmobile. Oh, and the coffee.
Come on, Pat. It takes about 10 minutes to get to the airstrip, and our boys will be along any minute now.
Well, honey, don't just
stand there. Let's go. Wait a minute, Ann.
What's the matter, for heaven's sake?
Well, I don't know exactly.
Look, Pat, for weeks you've been waiting for the time you'd go on the clubmobile ship.
Well, now you're going instead of...
I know that. That's what I mean. You see, ever since I joined the Red Cross, I kept thinking about when I'd meet the missions. I'd think of sweating it out with the ground crews, waiting for the planes to come in. And I'd think about how I'd talk to the pilots and, you know, laugh with them. Things like that. But now I...
But now what?
I'm scared.
Come on, Pat. Let's get the stuff in the clubmobile.
Okay, then. Here we go. Oh, gosh, Ann. No kidding. I've been waiting for this. I got here. I thought I...
Say, what's the matter with this thing, anyway?
Does it take long to get to the strip?
No, about 10 minutes.
Well, it won't take us that long. Ann. Ann, the battery's dead. The battery's dead.
But it can't be. I...
Pat.
Hmm?
Try turning on the ignition.
Oh, Ann.
Forget it, honey. You're just excited.
Well, this time we're really off. We went backwards.
So we did. This time, instead of reverse, put it in first pass.
Yeah, maybe it would help. Well, okay, Ann. This time, I guarantee we're really off.
Well, we made it, Pat. Everything set?
Already. Coffee, fruit juice, donuts. Oh, but why don't they come?
They'll come.
Listen, Ann, what'll I say?
You've had dates, haven't you?
Oh, sure, for heaven's sake, but this is...
The same thing. These are just boys, Pat. 20, 21 years old, most of them. Just talk to them. Joke with them. Help them relax so they can be interrogated by air intelligence.
What's that for?
Well, intelligence officers question the crew so they can learn of possible enemy losses, new tactics, new equipment, things like that. Happens after every mission. That's our job, see? To get the boys to relax so they can talk.
Oh, I wish they'd come. Say, you don't think...
Well, hi, Bill. Pat,
This is Bill Anders, chief of the ground crew for the Grease Lightning.
Hi, Pat.
Hello. Ground crew for the what?
The Grease Lightning. Ain't you ever heard of it? That's the best blasted fort in the whole Air Force. You knew, huh?
This is the first time Pat sweated out a strike.
Oh. Well, take it easy, kid. This is the toughest part.
They're a little late, aren't they?
Yeah, we just got a report that one of them got it over the target.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Tough.
Which one?
I don't know. Just hope it wasn't my boys. That's all. Just hope it wasn't my guys.
Oh, it couldn't be, Bill. That would rip Ware, the skipper.
Yeah, that's the way I figure. Now, Ollie's over there sick on a dog. He's sure it's his gang. Had a premonition last night, Ollie did. Kept me awake all night with it.
That's Russ's ship.
Yeah, Ollie's sure they got it. Last night he dreamed he seen him go down. He's feeling bad, real bad. Well, I'll see you later, Anne.
All right, Bill. Bill, if you hear anything more, let me know, will you?
Well, yeah, sure, I will, Anne. See, they sure are late, aren't they?
Listen, Anne. And does it happen often?
Plane's going down?
Yeah.
Yes, Pat, it does.
But how can you stand it?
Well, sometimes you can't. This is the worst. Not knowing which one. Not knowing who. You see, Pat, sometimes there's a special boy.
I know, Anne. Mary told me about it.
It was right out here on the strip. Just like now. All the planes came in. Only his didn't. We were going to be married.
Look, Pat, they're coming. Where?
Over there, see? Oh.
Hey, Bill, they're coming.
Turn on the controller, Pat.
What?
The controller, turn it on.
Okay.
Come on, Ann, we better get the coffee and juice ready and get out the donuts.
Hurry up, Ann. They're coming in. The boys are coming in.
Listening to Lana Turner in Donut Girl on the Cavalcade of America, brought to you by the DuPont Company, maker of better things for better living through chemistry. When Red Cross recreation worker Pat Holland first landed in New Guinea to serve the 5th Air Force, she felt like Florence Nightingale and Bob Hope and Hedy Lamarr all rolled into one. But weeks of scrubbing floors and making sandwiches have helped prepare her for the greatest heartache of them all, waiting on the airstrip for the men to return from a combat mission.
You've heard about Rip Guare, I guess. Everybody has. Well, I met Rip while I was in New Guinea. That first day I was out on the airstrip in a clubmobile. His was the first plane in. I remember it was my first plane, and I was nervous and scared, and I couldn't seem to talk to the boys at all. And, well, the boys just talked to each other about their mission.
Hey, listen, I had that zero right in my sights when Don and my machine gun didn't go and get a frog in a throat.
Yeah,
I remember that, Tony, because my gun jammed at the same time.
Hey, Annie, how about some more bug juice?
Yeah, come on, Annie, fill it up,
okay,
will you?
Okay, I'm coming. How about you, Jim?
Yeah, sure. Listen, man, 2 zeros are coming from the left, see? So I yelled to Tony, I told him to climb upstairs, boy, climb upstairs.
And that was when I met Rip Guare. I was standing there feeling pretty useless and out of things when...
Hello. I'm Rip Guare.
And I'm...
I know, you're scared. You needn't be.
Well, it's just that I can't seem to get started.
I know, it's my boys. They're shy, see? Besides, they're pretty hopped up right now. We kind of had a rough time of it. As soon as they get to know you, it'll be all right. Besides, you're too pretty. They can't ignore you for long. Where are you from?
Chicago. Thanks, Rip.
That's okay. What's your name?
Pat.
Pat, huh?
Uh-huh.
You remind me of Emily.
Emily?
Yeah, my wife.
Oh.
I haven't seen her in 3 years. Hey, you guys, where's your manners? Jim, Tony, Fred, this is Pat, a new G.I. Junior come to brighten up the war. Well, come on, speak up.
Hiya, Pat.
Hiya, Pat. Hey, Tony, Pat's from your hometown.
Yeah? No kidding. Say, how's Chicago making out?
Exactly the same, Tony. The Drake's next to the lake, and the weather's next to impossible.
Gee, Pat, remember Randolph Street?
Sure.
Ah, boy, that street has memories for me. I remember one day I was walking past Marshall Fields. A girl come up to me. She said, right out, she said. Hey.
It wasn't spectacular what Rick did. Oh, but it meant so much. He made me accept it. One of the gang. Funny how important that is. To have boys. Near babies, some of them. Accept you as an equal. But then you remember that these aren't just kids. They're men. Brave men who face death casually every day. I was traveling in pretty honored company. And it was a swell feeling. Oh, one other thing happened that day. As the bombers came in one by one, Bill, Rip's ground crew sergeant, came running up to us and...
Hey, Pat, listen, I was wrong. I was wrong.
Wrong about what? Yeah,
we didn't lose the plane. They're all in. See, here comes the last one now. All the planes is in.
Oh, Bill, that's wonderful.
Oh, boy, I'll say it is. Listen, when Russ's plane rolled down the strip, his ground crew were so happy they cried like babies. But they were so afraid about Ollie's premonition. Yeah, but when they saw that plane, no kidding, they just cried, all of them. They, all except Ollie. He was so happy, he got sick.
Hey, put on another record, somebody. Come on, the party's just starting.
How about the one of the new ones Rip just brought back from Australia?
Yeah, yeah, the one about the pair of shoes, Annie.
Right, here it is. Shoo, shoo, baby. Yeah.
Come on, Ann, let's dance this one on.
Okay, Bill, you talk me into it.
You want to dance, Ben?
Oh, sure, Rip, I'd love to.
Would you rather see a picture of my son?
Oh, Rip, did it come?
Yep, I got it in the mail this morning. Hey, come on out here, Pat. Here, get over by the light. There it is.
Oh, Rip, he's a fine boy. How old is he?
3. Some kid, huh?
Yeah, he looks just like his dad.
Yeah. Emily keeps writing he acts like me, too. He says he's got a lopsided grin. See, you can see it in the picture. It's blurred a little. I guess he moved. But if you look closer...
Oh, yes. Yes, I see it. Oh, geez, darling.
Yeah. Emily says he laughs like me. And he won't eat his eggs.
Won't eat his eggs?
Nope, can't stand them. But when I get home, I'll... Oh, no, I guess I won't. I don't like eggs either. Oh, gosh, Pat.
I know.
You know, I never seen him. Little guy was born just 4 days after I was shipped overseas. But he knows me. Emily's taking care of that. She had a little picture made from a big one she had. And my boy, don't kid me, wears it pinned to his jacket like it was a medal or something. And Emily says that whenever he meets somebody, he points to my picture and says, "Hey, you, that's my daddy." Wanna go back and dance, Pat?
I'd love to. Oh, gee whiz.
Huh? What are you laughing at?
Me? I never thought of it before, but... Well, if I ever have a little girl of my own, I sure hope a little guy like yours has her telephone number. It wasn't that I was in love with Rip. That would be too simple. But I loved him. We all loved him. I don't know why. He was just a dumb-looking 23-year-old kid from Kansas City who had a wife he adored and a baby son he'd never seen. And yet, there was something, I don't know, special about him. Every man in the squadron felt it. They worshipped him. Why, they'd have followed him if he had led them into a battle where the odds were 100-1 against them. Maybe there's an easier way of saying this. Maybe if I said that when Rip walked into a room, suddenly your heart wouldn't weigh a thing. You'd know what I mean. Well, anyway, that's the way it was. And that's what made that day so unreal, so unbelievable. I was in the Red Cross hut mixing fruit juice. This time I was alone. Anne was over at the barracks. She and I had been told to stand by to meet a special mission due in any minute. So a couple of others had gone out to take care of our own boys. I was working at the table when I looked up
and... Pat, come in a minute, will you?
It was Bill, the ground crew sergeant. I walked over to the door and...
Pat, I don't believe it for a minute, so it's all right. This report's here.
What report?
It came in, they say it's verified. Oh, they got Church working up in communications. How do they know it's verified?
What?
I don't believe him, Pat. Them happy Charlies is fighting a dream war. I don't pay no attention to him.
What's happened, Bill?
Well, that's what I'm trying to tell you. It's just a... Look, I don't believe it for a minute.
You don't believe what?
Not for a minute, but they say that...
They say what?
Rick got it over target. Like I say, them communications Joseph's dreaming. Half the time they shoot out these fancy reports that don't...
Are the bombers in yet, Bill?
No, but they don't make no...
All of them in, Bill.
No. Rip's playmate. My playmate. Listen, Pat, I gotta go now and tell the other guys not to believe it. See, they're gonna get the report, and I gotta tell them not to believe it.
Bill, wait a minute. Bill! But he'd gone. I wanted to run after him. I wanted to run and yell and I wanted to cry. Hello?
Lieutenant Crilly here.
Yes, Lieutenant.
A squadron of replacement bombers coming in. Full complement of planes and men, so you better have a flock of sandwiches and coffee on hand. Estimated time of arrival, 0900. Okay? Hey, did you get it?
0900. Sure, I got it, Lieutenant. That's well. We'll be there. That's the way I learned the main thing war teaches. That things don't happen to other people anymore. They happen to you. Of course, you learn other things, too. You learn about words like faith and hope. Words like that. Funny, but they come to life for you when you're mixed up with a war. And they work for you. I've seen it happen. Again and again I've seen it happen. And maybe the official report does list Rip as missing in action, presumed to be dead. All right, maybe he is. But a whole squadron of men in New Guinea, a girl and a little boy in Kansas City, and I, we don't believe it. We know that somewhere, Rip Guerra is alive. Well, that's about all there is to it. I stayed on in New Guinea until about 3 months ago, when my mother became seriously ill and the Red Cross rushed me back to the States. Mother's fine now, so of course I...
What, Pat, child, what are you doing? You'll be late.
What? Oh, no, I won't, Mother. I was just sitting here thinking. I was going to write Florence a letter.
Oh, honey, I wouldn't do that now. You'll miss the train.
It'll only take a minute, Mother. See? Look. Dearest Florence, just received your letter... And I'm thrilled to death you're going to be a clubmobile girl for the Red Cross. The rest of your letter I'll have to answer on board ship. You see, I'm leaving tonight for New Guinea. I'm going back with a new group of Red Cross workers. Meanwhile, lots of luck to you. Love, Pat. Oh, P.S. I just had a hunch. Be looking for you on a ship.
Turner, and to all the members of tonight's DuPont Cavalcade. Smoke shells are typical of many different DuPont products that have saved and will continue to save the lives of many Army and Navy men. By means of colored smoke candles and colored smoke shells that send up clouds of red, orange, yellow, green, and violet smoke, lives are saved by identifying our ground forces so that our supporting planes and artillery can distinguish them from the enemy. Since most of these products are made at Deepwater, New Jersey, the DuPont plant there might be called the plant that saves lives. Gain Whitman can tell you about some of the other interesting things they're doing at this plant.
Well, Walter, for one thing, they're making neoprene, DuPont's synthetic rubber for life rafts and life-saving suits. Neoprene rubber, made at the Deepwater plant, also goes into flame-resistant jackets for electric cables on shipboard, de-icers for airplane wings and radio balloons used by flyers forced down at sea. Freon refrigerants manufactured by DuPont at Deepwater play an important part
in a malaria control method that is saving many lives in the tropics. That's because Freon, expanding rapidly when the valve on a small dispenser is opened, carries insecticide into the farthest corners of a tent or room in a few seconds. If a soldier does get malaria, Army doctors treat him with atabrine, one ingredient of which is manufactured at the Deepwater plant. And in a sense, camphor made there saves lives too, because camphor is used in manufacturing the moving picture films that train our crack-shot aerial gunners to shoot first and shoot better. The plant that saves lives is known officially at DuPont as the Chambers Works, in honor of Dr. Arthur D. Chambers, who contributed much to its early development. But in peacetime, this 500-acre plant with 750 buildings and 9,000 employees has still another name, the plant that has never stopped growing. Because, literally, it never has stopped growing in more than 25 years. Men and women who qualify for jobs at this New Jersey plant at the DuPont Company today, and the plant is still hiring both men and women, have the best assurance of continuing employment. For when the war is won, the plant that saves lives will turn back into the plant that has never stopped growing, offering interesting, important jobs for long years to come. Men and women growing up with America's age of chemistry, supplying America and the world with an ever-increasing number of DuPont better things for better living through chemistry. Now, Walter Houston.
Next week, our cavalcade play tells the thrilling story of another war, the war against pain. You meet the men who fought this war, and you'll see how the victory they won is helping today to spare the wounded from the agony of surgery. Our star is Brian Dunleavy. I'm sure his performance will thrill you when you hear him in The Conquest of Pain on next Monday's DuPont Cavalcade of America. Thank you and good evening.
The music on tonight's cavalcade was composed and conducted by Robert Ambrister. This is Gene Whitman inviting you to tune in next week to The Conquest of Pain, starring Brian Dunleavy, brought to you by the E.I. DuPont, Dinah Morrison Company of Wilmington, Delaware. And think of this. The annual sale of Christmas seals has helped to reduce deaths caused by tuberculosis by 75%. Yet, since Pearl Harbor, TB has killed 145,000 civilians. That's why you should help by buying Christmas seals now.
This is the National Broadcasting Company. The Cavalcade of America. I'm Ron Hughes, and may the good Lord Jesus Christ bless you. And this is Yesterday, USA.
Everybody, on the tail end of tape number 7 for the two-week period that began on the 29th day of January. And I hope we're playing or saying or doing a little something to make your day a whole lot better. And speaking of days, have you checked out the new weekend lineup here on Yesterday USA? I've been talking about it. I've been promising it to you. And it's happening starting February the 3rd. And we've got at least 8 to 10 hours every Saturday and 8 to 10 hours every Sunday of new programming that you've never heard. It's old-time vintage programming and some new items as well. We guarantee you'll love it, and we're living up to our name here on Yesterday USA by playing the world's greatest old-time radio shows.
Don't touch that dial. This is Chuck Shaden inviting you to stay tuned for another hour of When Radio Was, presenting classic sounds from and about the golden age of broadcasting. This time we're going to be tuning into Inner Sanctum, and we'll have a little bit of comedy with Bob Hope. So stay close to your radio. We begin in just 2 minutes.
Every once in a while on Big Band Jump, we dip into the mail bag. Not really a mail bag, you understand. Most of the requests come in by email, a few by telephone, and some in the mail with envelopes and stamps. The mail bag with your requests on the next Big Band Jump. It's our sincere hope you'll join us.
It all starts February the 3rd here on Yesterday USA, and it will run all day long every Saturday and all day long every Sunday. Many, many new hours of programming here. About 10 hours of programming on Saturday and about 10 hours of programming on Sunday. The good news is your favorite program, well, like Twilight Zone, will be right where it's always been. As a matter of fact, we'll be even adding a new Twilight Zone every Sunday. So nothing's going away. Only good things are coming your way here on Yesterday USA. And I want to say thank you to some of my good friends like Dale in Asheville, North Carolina. Dale sends along $52. And a wonderful letter. Check out this letter, if you will. It says, "Dear Bill, I've been listening to Yesterday USA for about a year, and I thought it was time to contribute something to help with the expenses. I surely enjoy the old-time radio programs. They bring back lots of memories for me, and since I found your radio station on the Internet, I've just decided to sell the television set because, well, I keep your voice on the speaker all of the time when I'm at home anyway. Thanks for doing what you do, and keep up the good work." And that's Dale in Asheville, North Carolina, and there is a $52 check inside that envelope. Misty up in Amarillo, Texas, $20, bless her heart. And how about John in Alma, Texas? John sends along a $5 bill, but it was sure in a big package. And I opened it up, and there is a beautiful JFK tribute record. It's one I don't have, and it's one I'm going to be playing for you. Thank you, John. John in Alma, Texas. And let's move along to Lincolnton, North Carolina. That's where we'll find Sue and Bruce. And inside this envelope, $60. Sue and Bruce, Lincolnton, North Carolina. Michael King, down in Florida, there's his annual $60 pledge. It comes to us $5 a month, and he never misses a month. Thank you, Michael King. Let's go across the ocean, can we? How about Jay and Harumi in Yokohama, Japan. Yes, $60 from Japan. And back up to the States and New Jersey, $5 from Bill in New Jersey. Oh, boy, from Yokohama to North Carolina. They're supporting us here on Yesterday USA. And I can't wait to start those new programs for you. It's all going to happen. It's all going to happen. Starting every Saturday and every Sunday here on Yesterday USA. And we're making our big debut on Saturday, February the 3rd. Check it out. It's going to be happening here on Yesterday USA. All the big programs. And here is a sample of two of them.
Don't touch that dial. This is Chuck Shaden inviting you to stay tuned for another hour of When Radio Was, presenting classic sounds from and about the golden age of broadcasting. This time we're going to be tuning into Inner Sanctum, and we'll have a little bit of comedy with Bob Hope. So stay close to your radio. We begin in just 2 minutes.
Every once in a while on Big Band Jump, we dip into the mail bag. Not really a mail bag, you understand. Most of the requests come in by email, a few by telephone, and some in the mail with envelopes and stamps. The mail bag with your requests. On the next Big Band Jump, it's our sincere hope you'll join us. Would you stand by for Big Band Jump? It's music of and associated with the big bands. I'm Don Kennedy. On today's Big Band Jump, we explore the early days of Capitol Records, an unlikely beginning during the turmoil and shortages of the war years, and on the brink of a strike by the Musicians Union, and an almost immediate and surprising success. Despite what appeared to be irrational and untimely, Capitol Records turned out to be a capital idea. The early music, the artists, and the men behind Capitol Records on this Big Band Jump. 1942 couldn't have been a worse time to start a record company. For one thing, there was a war. Musicians were being drafted. The war created a shortage of shellac used in making 78 records. But more importantly, it was needed to make bombs. The Musicians Union was in dispute with the record companies and was planning to stop all recording at the end of July. But in April of 1942, a songwriter, a record store owner, and a movie producer started Capitol Records. A month later, they recorded their first hit.
And he dropped them on down the old fairway.
This is Yesterday USA. I'm Bill Bragg. And this is a sample of the weekend programming that's going to be coming your way starting February the 3rd. 8 to 10 hours a day on Saturday and 8 to 10 hours a day on Sunday. Some of the biggest names in old-time radio are coming here to Yesterday USA. So do check it out. Don't forget about a big live broadcast 7 nights a week, 10:30 p.m. until midnight Eastern Time. And, of course, all the great 16 tapes you've loved for so many years, they're staying right where they are. It's all happening here on Yesterday USA, and the big new weekend lineup starts February the 3rd. Check it out. 8 to 10 hours of new programming each and every Saturday and Sunday, only here on Yesterday USA.